Hello, and welcome to TwerpCast episode 40, 80s cast. If you've been with us for 40 episodes, you must be howling mad. Just don't have a bad attitude, we'll be sure and get you some FaceTime. This week, we're broadcasting from special remote location in Hannibal. As you may have guessed, we will be discussing the big screen presentation of The Karate Kid. Today, I'd like to introduce you to the man who personally ruined wearing a single glove as an 80s fashion statement, executive producer James Caswell.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, co-executive producer of Twerps and, in his alter ego of Attila Griffin, leads a ragtag bunch of ex-Boy Scouts on the run from PBS. If you're in trouble and have absolutely no one else you can call, maybe you can find the D-Team.
Also joining us today is special guest host Ken Halloran, the man single-handedly responsible for ruining leg warmers as an 80s fashion statement.
I thought it was swine shirts, actually.
Those never go out of style.
Those were never in style.
Book 'em, Dano.
Seeing as 30 years has passed, it's now time for nostalgia to take over. The 80s are making a resurgence.
Again.
Still. As I'm sure we've said multiple times in the past, the 80s is a very popular time period for writers and producers of today to
strip mine
ideas for relaunching and reworking old concepts. Now, part of it is, I'm sure that they're trying to cash in on these markets that were very popular back then and proved to be a money-making franchise. The other part of it, I think, is that they are reliving childhood memories and kind of embracing the things that they enjoyed as kids as well.
And if you're pure cynic...
like you.
Exactly. You know that cash is king, and by looking at things that once produced a lot of cash, you can just try and repeat the exact same thing to cash in a second time.
Now, while they've been doing this for probably the last decade or more, the weekend of June 11th was a rarity in the fact that we actually had two 80s franchises get rebooted on the same weekend, those being the A-Team and The Karate Kid. Therefore, we're going to mesh them together and review both movies.
Why don't you talk about the original A-Team for a moment?
In 1972, a crack commando unit was sentenced by a military court for a crime they did not commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
Yes, folks, he just did that by memory. Created by Frank Lupo and Stephen J. Cannell, A-Team debuted on January 23, 1983, and ran for 5 seasons. The show starred George Peppard, Dirk Benedict, who was on Battlestar Galactica, and a flavor of the month at that particular time named Mr. T.
A pity the fool who don't know who that is!
He was the bad guy in Rocky III.
See? Now you don't have to be pitied. The fourth member of the ensemble was also the least known of the four, named Dwight Schultz, who later went on to play Barclay on Star Trek The Next Generation.
And there wasn't that Melinda, what was her last name?
Yeah, unfortunately the guys never really considered the girls part of the group.
That's because Peppard and Melinda, whatever her last name was, didn't get along.
Not very well at all. As a child, one of the things that actually drew me to the A-Team was that it really came across as being one of several non-costume superhero shows that were popular in days where hero shows weren't popular on TV. Shows like Knight Rider and Airwolf, where you had a superhero-esque setting without the trappings of the costume and the superpowers and things like that. Things that people didn't think were going to be at all popular on television. But the A-Team had...
cars and guns.
They had cars, they had guns. All the lead characters had nicknames and or code names like Hannibal and Faceman and B.A. and Howlin' Mad Murdoch. They would whip up different types of weapons whenever needed. It just had an overall superhero-type feel to me.
You know, honestly, I don't know if I would use the word super in front of hero, but I agree that it does fit in with that whole class of heroic adventure, whether it be the Lone Ranger or Zorro or the Scarlet Pimpernel. I mean, these were the guys who came in and righted wrongs.
Yeah, the fine line between mercenary vigilante and hero.
Actually, that was one thing that was never clear. They said they were soldiers of fortune, but I saw a hell of a lot of episodes of that, and I don't remember them ever actually claiming the reward. They almost always took the reward money and gave it to the victim.
During the first season, there was sometimes discussions of, are you going to be able to afford us? But yeah, you never really saw money changing hands. You never really thought that they were overly concerned with getting the paycheck.
That and Templeton Peck was a gigolo.
Yeah, they had to get their money somewhere. The show may have referred to them as soldiers of fortune, but they had more in common with Robin Hood and his merry men.
Yeah, with Colonel Lynch being the Sheriff of Nottingham.
So the story revolves around four Special Forces officers on the run for crimes they didn't commit. The first 4 years, they worked as mercs for hire to defend the defenseless without killing, primarily due to the FCC codes.
You know, the only person I actually remember ever being shot on the show was one episode where Mr. T actually got shot and had to get the blood transfusion from Howlin' Mad Murdock.
And he was worried that crazy was contagious.
Given the amount of bloodshed they had, you'd think that their crack commando unit was part of G.I. Joe?
Yeah, as often as they were actually able to hit the targets that they were shooting at. Tires? Not a problem. Engine blocks? Piece of cake. Putting a hole in a human body? Sorry, we can't do that.
Great job shooting out the tires. I was aiming for his head.
We can shoot out the tires, send the vehicle rolling through the air 3 times to crash onto the roof, completely caving it in. But the guys that were in the vehicle are able to crawl out, and they're perfectly fine.
Airbags. Gotta love them.
Then we had the fateful fifth season, where the team was captured by Robert Vaughn and forced to work for him for their freedom.
And they got that other guy with them from that season, too.
Yeah, Frankie.
Yeah.
The thing that I remember most about the character of Frankie was the fact that Frankie's code name was Dishpan Man. What the heck kind of name is Dishpan Man? Really, call me anything else, just don't call me Dishpan Man!
Well, you know, he was a superhero, and he had a sidekick, Scrub Brush Boy!
At least it wasn't Soap Scum Boy.
The only thing I liked in that season was the one episode with David McCollum. Yeah, and they actually called it The Uncle Affair. I know I saw it, but I don't actually remember it. It's more of, on a conceptual level, I appreciate it.
Needless to say, Season 5 did not go over that well for the fans of A-Team. Any time that you go on in and completely change up the formula, you're going to alienate the core audience.
I'll remember what the root of retooling is. Tool.
So the final episode of A-Team aired December 30th, 1986, without a resolution to the series.
So really, it was not on 5 seasons. It was on 2 half-seasons and 3 seasons.
Yes.
Okay.
Which would make it 5 series.
David McCollum was the only English guy on the show, and that was only the one episode.
But for 5 seasons, 3 years, however you want to refer to it, the A-Team was a mainstay staple of NBC's programming lineup. And it was a very, very popular show. It made NBC a good chunk of money, and there has been talks for at least the past decade of wanting to do an A-Team movie. They finally did it.
Is it comparable to the TV show? And I would add a second part to that question. Does it need to be comparable to the TV show to be its own movie?
In the end, no, it doesn't, because if you are rebooting the franchise, it can go in whatever direction you want it to. The pleasant surprise for me was that it really was comparable to the TV show. This is the origin story of how the A-Team got together and were convicted of the crime that they didn't commit. It's been updated to modern situations. It's not 1972 anymore. But they hold true to all of the things that were established in the TV show. They didn't go off and say, okay, well, we're going to make Hannibal be a mass murderer, and we're going to turn Face Man into a priest. They stuck true to the characters as they were designed for the TV show.
And they made it a point in the movie itself where they said that they aimed for a minimum of bloodshed. Well, still bloodshed, but they tried to keep it to a minimum.
Yeah, it is actually within the storyline of the movie why they do things the way they do them, why they specifically shoot for tires and engine blocks as opposed to just putting a bullet through somebody's head.
There's a scene towards the beginning of the movie where the A-Team compare themselves to actual mercenaries, and they're like, we should be doing this job because there's going to be a lot less bloodshed if we do it. If you send in the mercs, it's going to be nothing but death.
This movie also does a wonderful job of explaining some of the personality quirks within the group itself. the explanation as to why an ex-ranger who's tough as nails like B.A. Baracus is scared to death of flying, within the first 10 minutes of the movie, you can completely understand why he doesn't like to fly.
Really, there are so many things this movie got absolutely right. As far as being comparable to the television series, I think people's biggest complaint about this movie is going to be, wow, it's like a 2-hour television episode. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. It really held true to the TV show.
If they could have made this with these actors as a 2-hour television pilot for the beginning of a new series, I would have loved it. Problem is that they can't afford this kind of a budget on a weekly basis. So, yes, we're going to have movies now.
But also, as you were saying, they got the characterization right. They got the humor right. They got the story right. Whoever wrote this really understood what the television show was really trying to accomplish. And let's face it, it wasn't trying to be great literature. It was trying to be 60 minutes of entertainment.
It was 80s version of camp.
It really was 80s version of camp. And this was the 2010 version of camp. It held true to the stories, the characters, the action. I think they did a marvelous job of translating this from the little screen to the big screen.
Of all of the television adaptations that I've seen over the past few years, especially of 80s stuff, this is one of the best adaptations.
I would go so far as to say it was the best. I enjoyed the Addams Family movies. They were funny. They were really right for the time. But I think as far as actual enjoyment, being on the edge of my seat, laughing my ass off, this movie rung the bell.
That and the fact that Addams Family was 60s nostalgia in the early 90s.
Point taken, but there are so many movies now that are coming from television shows.
Yeah, okay. I remember when it was the other way around, where if a movie was successful, they'd make a TV show based on it.
And they do still occasionally do it. It's just few and far between.
Private Benjamin comes to mind.
MASH.
Highlander.
But the most recent batch of television shows to movies have really stunk. Starsky and Hutch. Ugh.
Bewitched.
Bewitched is the only one of those group I'd actually give two pens in the pocket protector. The Beverly Hillbillies.
The only good part about the movie The Beverly Hillbillies was Buddy Ebsen as Barnaby Jones.
Well, that being said, I think the best part of the Starsky and Hutch movie was having the original Starsky and Hutch in the ending of the movie.
I don't know. I thought Snoop Dogg did a pretty good job as Honey Bear.
That's because Snoop Dogg's always been Honey Bear.
It wasn't acting.
But other shows like The Dukes of Hazzard, I can give you two very good reasons to watch The Dukes of Hazzard.
Jessica Simpson.
Yes.
So taking 80s television and transferring it to the big screen is not a guaranteed success, especially if it's done horribly, horribly.
Jessica Simpson.
Horribly wrong. So it was very, very nice to see a transition that actually worked well, that was enjoyable, that we could sit there and not only enjoy the movie that was in front of us, but also reflect back on the enjoyment that we had back in the 80s without having those sensibilities stomped on, ran over, and shot through the head.
So what did you guys think of Star Trek? The recent one was rebooting the franchise.
Well, Ken, you make a good point. The last one that really did make a transition well from television to the movies was the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie.
But again, we're talking a couple of good apples in a barrel that's rotting. It's nice, though, to be able to compare A-Team to J.J. Abrams' Star Trek in regards to good quality storytelling.
You know, the television show was not trying to be great literature. It wasn't trying to be Citizen Kane. It wasn't trying to be MASH. It was its own little unique entertainment universe. And I honestly think this movie fits that exact same role. I love all the actors in it, but there's no Sir Laurence Olivier. I love the storytelling, but it wasn't William Shakespeare.
If it had been, it wouldn't have been A-Team.
I think this movie is the right movie at the right time. It was just done so well.
That and the original A-Team really fit your criteria for a good movie for good television. It had explosions, it had car chases, and it had gunfights.
I've never said that I was a highbrow moviegoer.
Anyone who's been listening for 40 episodes knows you're not a highbrow moviegoer.
Now, one of the complaints that I did hear from a very biased source is that they thought that the movie was too violent because there are people who actually get shot in this movie. Not everybody gets to crawl out of the rolled over vehicle. There are people who die. And their comment was that it's too violent. My comment to that is, no, I think it was just violent enough. It wasn't over the top. They were careful to only kill really when it was necessary. And it was more believable than the TV show was, because the fact that nobody ever got hit, nobody ever got hurt, unless it was central to the plot point of that particular episode, really was unbelievable.
The argument of over-violence is actually ridiculous. I would say that Harry Potter is more violent than the A-Team. But in addition, what movie are you looking for? The A-Team don't stand around at the airport going, "Would you like a flower?"
Actually, I was more bothered by the TV show. I wasn't bothered by the fact that it was violent. I was bothered by the lack of consequences to the violence. A violent act has violent consequences. That's the way things are. To not allow there to be consequences to the violence portrayed a picture that actually kind of disturbed me. So I think the movie actually got it better.
I can't say it any better myself, so I won't.
I guess all three of us are in perfect agreement on this. I don't think it really bothered me in the 80s that there wasn't the consequences. I agree with your comment on it, but television in and of itself is so far-fetched that watching people shoot guns at each other that can't hit each other never really fazed me. And how many episodes of The Adventures of Superman did a villain empty all of his bullets at Superman and then throw the gun?
So, content-wise, I really did think that it was more believable. The next question has to be, how believable was the acting? Because, let's face facts, George Peppard put a lot of himself into Hannibal Smith. To try to differentiate between the actor and the character is really rather difficult. So, if you're going to play Hannibal Smith on a par with the previous performance, you really have to kind of channel a little bit of George Peppard in doing so. Same thing goes for Mr. T. The difference between Mr. T and B.A. Baracus was letters.
As far as the acting goes, and I mean this for both the television show and the movie, and I mean this as a term of endearment, truly I do, but there was a whole lot of scenery chewing going on.
Yeah, there was. That said, I do think Liam Neeson did a very good job of playing George Peppard.
Did you catch the way he phrased that? Liam Neeson did a good job of playing George Peppard.
Yes, I completely agree with that. It wasn't as hokey as I was afraid it was going to be.
As much as I loved Liam Neeson doing his George Peppard, Cerrito Copley as Howlin' Mad Murdock was a scene stealer.
Oh, just like Dwight Schultz back on the TV show, this guy really showed his chops. I really did believe that he was Howlin' Mad Murdock. To have seen him in District 9 and to see him as Murdock, it was two completely different characters. And from what I've seen in interviews, he's more like the guy from District 9 than Murdock. So I thought it was just a wonderful job of acting.
Don't know how his personality is, but he's a good enough actor that I really think unless you know he's the guy from District 9, you wouldn't know.
And honestly, I had no problems with any of the acting jobs in this movie. For being a UFC professional fighter, I thought that Quentin Jackson did a great job of playing Mr. T, but then again, he has a lot in common with Mr. T, so he really was a great choice for the role. I think that was more great job of casting than necessarily great job of acting, but I'm not going to say anything bad about the man's acting. And Bradley Cooper
was not hungover.
Bradley Cooper was very impressive. I did see him in The Hangover. I think these are the only two things that I've seen him in. And he did a good job of being the male gigolo, think with the little head over the big head type character. I had no problem with him being face man. So all four of the leads did a very, very, very good job. Jessica Biel as Captain Sosa was good. She did a whole lot more in this movie than any of the female leads on the TV show were ever allowed to do. So she had that going for her.
She did more than Dishpan Man.
I think the tank did more than Dishpan Man in the way of helping out the team. Gerald McCraney played General Morrison, the team's commanding officer, while in Iraq.
I loved seeing Gerald McCraney. I mean, here's a nod of the hat to 80s television.
And then, of course, you have Colonel Lynch. On the 80s TV show, every week the team was being pursued by Colonel Lynch.
And they were going after the one-armed man.
The movie would not have been the same without a Colonel Lynch, and Patrick Wilson was just about as sleazy, obnoxious, underhanded as you would expect Hollywood to portray a CIA agent in this day and age. For those of you who don't recognize the name Patrick Wilson immediately, he played Night Owl 2 in The Watchmen.
As for ratings, I would give this 4 pens in the pocket protector. I would have to caveat that as saying, as a summer blockbuster, this is probably the perfect summer blockbuster.
It is extremely enjoyable summer blockbuster fare. As we've said, this isn't Academy Award winning material. This isn't something that you're going to see nominated for tons of awards at the end of the year. But if you want to go and spend a hot afternoon in an air-conditioned theater and just forget about everything else and just laugh and enjoy a good movie, this is your movie. I really hope that they actually are able to make sequels to this, and that's the first time I've said that about a non-Star Trek TV movie in a long, long time. You know, I never give a perfect score. I'm going to give this 3.5 pens in the pocket protector.
I do want to see another Charlie's Angels movie. That I really enjoyed those.
Those were good.
Those were good, but they weren't as loyal to the TV show as this one was.
Agreed.
And those were almost a decade ago now, so I can still hold to my in a long, long time.
So a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away is 10 years.
Roughly, yeah.
Just check. Ending the discussion on the A-Team opens up an opportunity for us to discuss another 80s franchise, The Karate Kid. Not the Hilary Swank one, the Ralph Macchio one.
And with us being the comic book geeks that we are, we are not talking about the DC Comics character who belonged to the Legion of Superheroes. That was something that threw me off back in the 80s. When I heard Karate Kid, I thought Val Armor. The Karate Kid franchise started in 1984 with a picked-on Danny, played by Ralph Macchio, being trained by maintenance man Mr. Miyagi, played by Pat Morita.
Pat Morita having spent many years of fame on Happy Days as Arnold.
That and being one of the 3 Asian guys that they would occasionally have come in to play Koreans on MASH.
There was more than 3.
The point is, MASH reused their limited supply of Asian Americans.
That's true. I never understood why George Takei never went. Seriously, I mean, he was an Asian American actor. Why wasn't he ever on MASH?
He was too big of a name at the time. The movie did well enough to spawn Karate Kid Part 2 in 1986, had the 2 lead characters traveling to Okinawa to attend Miyagi's father's funeral and face his childhood nemesis, who was also running a dojo that Danny had to compete against. Again, Part 2 did well enough to warrant a Part 3, returning to the U.S., and had Daniel and Miyagi facing off against the Cobra Kai again, because it worked so well in the first movie.
Wait, so we're saying that basically the first sequel was the one where they actually tried to advance the story, and the second sequel was the one where they just tried to rehash the first film?
Yeah.
I'll be honest here. The only thing about the new Karate Kid movie that I thought was missing was Martin Kobe as the John Kreese character.
1989 also brought along a short-lived Karate Kid animated series.
Thank God I was overseas.
Thank God I had better taste than that at the time.
I don't even think I knew about this.
Very few people did. It lasted for 13 episodes. When I was doing the research for the episode, I realized that it was out there, and I remembered that it had been on, but I never remembered watching it, which I count as a good thing. Danny and Mr. Miyagi were looking for some sort of ancient artifact that...
Okay, enough.
Yeah, you get it. If you're that desperate to see it...
YouTube.
While Karate Kid and Karate Kid Part 2 did pretty well, Karate Kid Part 3, a lot of people realized that A, this was rehashing the original plot, and B, Ralph Macchio was getting way too old to be considered a Karate Kid.
It was time for him to take over the Pat Morita role.
But they weren't quite done beating this horse yet. They decided that they wanted to create a next Karate Kid in 1994, where Miyagi took on a new pupil in the form of Julie, played by Hilary Swank.
Does Hilary Swank really have the acting chops to pull off a champion fighter?
She did 10 years later.
Here's where you can say the one good thing about the next Karate Kid. The casting director saw young talent and knew it was there.
Yeah, this really was one of Hilary Swank's first roles. Unfortunately, she had the acting experience of a brand new actor as well, but then again, she also went on to win 2 Oscars, so she must have been capable of doing something right. It just wasn't shown in this particular movie.
You know, I don't know that it has anything to do with her acting ability. I mean, there are other actors, say Michael Caine, who have an Oscar, but just will be in anything. Michael Caine, God love him, is an acting whore.
Kind of like Samuel L. Jackson, but with an Oscar.
Exactly like Samuel Jackson with an Oscar. Hilary Swank got the script that she got. She got the director that she got. Just because it's got Pat Morita in it doesn't make it a good movie.
And she was a just starting out struggling actress, getting an opportunity at a lead role. You don't really pass those up at the very beginning of your career.
Not only a lead role, but she had a chance to revitalize a franchise.
Little did she know that this particular movie would be the final nail in that franchise's coffin. Although, personally, I think the animated series is what put it into the coffin.
Now let's make sure it's dead now!
The next Karate Kid was the TNT liner around the coffin that made it go...
You know, the producers should look at her contract and see if Hilary Swank has one of those contracts that requires sequels.
Just to make her come back and do another one?
Yeah.
No! Personally, I hope that she isn't under contract and they don't try to do that, because I really do think that Jaden Smith was a much better Kung Fu Kid.
Better than Hilary Swank?
Better than Ralph Macchio.
Yeah.
Of course, we are talking about the new movie, starring the eldest offspring of Will and Jada Pinkett Smith, who are also producers on this movie. Oh, and Jackie Chan was in it, too.
Let's talk about Jaden. I think it's unfair to Ralph Macchio to really say that Jaden's a better actor. Despite the fact that this movie is 90% identical to the original Karate Kid, it has a much different feeling. Ralph Macchio's Karate Kid still had a lot of the 80s camp in it. Simple, like, throwaway lines. What belt do you have, Mr. Miyagi? Oh, JCPenney.
This is true. Whereas this one came across as more of a dramatic action movie. Considering that Jackie Chan was one of the 2 lead stars in it, there really wasn't a whole lot of humor. In fact, his character was very serious and very somber, and I was very impressed that they didn't fall back on the, hey, let's play Jackie Chan as a clown, and actually let him show some of his dramatic acting chops.
It's funny, I would not call this Jackie Chan's best movie ever, but I might go so far as to say this was Jackie Chan's best acting role. I was floored by his ability to perform. I did not know he was such a good actor.
I will go so far as to say that this was his best American film ever.
Oh, no. There's Cannonball Run.
I hold to my statement. But we'll get back to Jackie in a minute. We were talking about Jaden. At this point, Will Smith's acting chops are not questioned by anyone. He has well established himself as not only a strong Hollywood moneymaker, but also as a good actor. He's done some really impressive work. Jada Pinkett Smith, likewise. Very well known. Not as popular as her husband, but she still has good acting chops. So there really isn't a whole lot of surprise that their son, who is not only of their genetic material, but who also has the benefit of being tutored by them, learning from their experiences, could become a good actor. The surprising part for me is that he's done it at such a young age.
It's kind of interesting. I would say perhaps he did a better job in this role than Hilary Swank did in essentially the same role. But to compare him to another child actor, he was nowhere near the quality of a Haley Joel Osment in The Sixth Sense.
The job that he did on that movie was comparable to any adult actor that I can think of. That being said, comparing Jaden Smith to Haley Joel Osment in The Sixth Sense would be like comparing Will Smith to Sir Laurence Olivier.
I kind of disagree with that. I think that what we're really looking at is 2 very young people and their ability to perform at that age. And I'm not complaining about Jaden's acting ability either. I think what we're seeing right now is the first major performance of somebody who's going to be a very high caliber actor.
I can easily see him being a big-budget blockbuster action star of the 2020s.
I really enjoyed the film. I honestly can say I think I enjoyed it more than the first film. And again, I actually was 16. I didn't actually find the first film that interesting. It was just sort of like, okay, it's Rocky with kids and karate instead of boxing.
And you're right, it does have the exact flair of a Rocky, Bad News Bears type storyline. The underdog rises to be the best in whatever sport it happens to be.
It's a pretty archetypal character. Question is, how well is it done? I thought it was very well done with Ralph Macchio, and I think it was very well done with Jaden Smith.
As you said, this movie really was 90% the very first Karate Kid. So the fact that I sat there getting the same feelings that I got while watching the very first Karate Kid movie, it didn't surprise me any. It didn't stop those feelings from surfacing. The, wow, the kid's really going to do it, isn't he? Wow, I'm really glad that the underdog is winning feeling was still there, even though I knew what was going to happen.
There's only a few places in there where they really take lines word for word, and I'm glad. A brand new writing of the story. The part that caught me, and I don't know how many people are going to catch this, if you see the very first fight scene between Jaden and his nemesis, it's almost shot for shot the same fight scene that Ralph Macchio filmed.
The fact that towards the end of the movie, I was able to lean over and say, sweep the leg.
Sweep the leg, though, is a major story element. The first fight, okay, first he's going to trip and fall over, then he's going to get punched in the face. That's not an element, that's just a fight.
Like I said, though, the fact that I had seen the first film, the fact that I was able to sit there and go, oh, this is going to happen next, because this is what happened in the first movie, and then it proceeds to happen. And that's going to be followed by, and that happens. That didn't bother me any. All that it really told me was that the people who wrote this movie really loved the first movie and appreciated it and wanted to pay proper homage to it.
That can go too far, also. I mean, the Gus Van Sant Psycho movie had nothing to add to the original. It was a shot-per-shot remake. And at that point, you just have to ask yourself, why?
I don't know, but I like the romantic story between Jaden Smith's character and the Chinese girl. I thought they actually got one of the best representations of the awkwardness of young love that I've seen on film ever.
The only thing that I would say is that Jaden still was way smoother than any 12-year-old that I've ever met.
Have you ever met a kid whose parents are Will Smith and Jaden Pinkett Smith?
No, I don't think he could have dumbed down his part 80 either, but I will say that the kid does have tons of talent, and provided that his parents are able to keep him focused and give him proper direction, which I fully believe that they can. From everything that we've seen so far of them as a couple, as parents, I don't think Jaden Smith is going to run the risk of becoming another Lindsay Lohan or Britney Spears. I think that they are going to give him the proper guidance to be able to handle being a celebrity and install a good work ethic.
Yes.
And if push comes to shove, he can always bounce up and down on the chairs on Oprah.
Jaden, my advice for you as a child actor is, if you go commando, don't let the cameras up your skirt.
So, for a first shot, I think he did an excellent job. I mean, I know that he's been in a couple of other things, supporting roles in some of his dad's movies, but this was his movie. He carries 50% of the burden for this film.
He does. I think what made the first Karate Kid movie was the relationship portrayed between Ralph Macchio and Pat Morita. That you really believed that there was something developing there as a father-son-esque relationship. And that's what makes this movie also, is Jaden Smith and Jackie Chan's relationship with one another. And you really believe that not only is Jaden taking the place of this man's son, but that Jaden is also seeing the father figure in Jackie Chan.
Yeah, one of the comments that I had heard from another reviewer was the fact that he didn't see that connection forming. And I don't know what movie he was watching. But I really felt like they did a better job in this movie of establishing that connection, of drawing Jackie Chan's character out of the hole that he was in. Because he really was in a emotional and psychological hole when Dre first meets him. And by working with this kid, teaching him Kung Fu, it draws him out of the hole. It brings him back to being the man that he was.
The line that actually shocked me most in this movie is when Jackie Chan says to Jaden, "You taught me a very valuable lesson." I was like, wow, I knew it had happened, but I was shocked to see it acknowledged.
And this piece that we're talking about here, this isn't Jaden Smith's portrayal. This is Jackie Chan's portrayal of this character. And in watching him, yes, I looked at the screen and I saw Jackie Chan, but I didn't see Jackie Chan's mannerisms. I didn't see the flamboyant devil-may-care acrobat. I saw a man who was downtrodden and who had pretty much let life beat him and who is slowly climbing out of this hole that he's in to the point where he's able to carry his head high again and he's able to take pride in something. That's the acting chops of Jackie Chan that from this point forward, anybody who casts him in a movie and expects him to be a clown is doing him a disservice.
Well, I don't think he ever really minded being the clown.
Comedy is tough to do.
He developed that role himself, and he made himself a superstar. I once heard a comparison that they said that Jackie Chan should be as big as Arnold Schwarzenegger in the United States. And he said, I have more fans than Arnold Schwarzenegger will ever have. They're just in Asia.
Yeah, when I'm referring to him being treated as a clown, I'm not referring to the stuff that he's well known for, where he does funny things and he does comedy. I'm talking about movies where they bring him in solely to be like a juggling bear, not asking anything more out of him than his name.
The Spy Next Door, perfect example. What a piece of crap. There is a director, a producer, a whole staff who had no idea who Jackie Chan was.
You know, it's funny. I somewhat enjoyed The Spy Next Door until I saw this movie. I look at this movie and I go, this is the type of respect that Jackie Chan should get as an actor from this point forward. And that's what I'm referring to. I'm referring to the level of respect that his co-workers should be showing him. Like you said, he is a huge name in Asia. He's done over 60 movies. Show the man the respect that he deserves.
I would love to see him get an Oscar nod for this movie. I just could not be more impressed with Jackie.
It was very, very good. And I told you, Kung Fu is a striking art.
So, we've talked about Jaden, we've talked about Jackie. The third character that was very reminiscent of the original movie was that of the mother, who was played by Taraji P. Henson. She's better known as playing the mother in The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which she received an Oscar nomination for.
On the one hand, I really don't want to talk about her because I don't have anything nice to say. But on the other hand, she was robbed. She really should have had that Oscar. One of the most incredible performances of all time.
That's actually the part that I wanted to bring up. In Benjamin Button, she did a phenomenal job. She really showed her acting chops. This movie, she was almost a complete cutout of a bad stereotype.
She was walking through the motions. She was not there.
Somebody knew that she was a third-string character and didn't ask for a good performance out of her. Because we know that she's capable of a great performance. And there's really no reason why, when you have Jaden Smith giving a great performance and Jackie Chan giving a great performance, that she should be the disappointment performance. She's a far better actress than that.
There were some scenes with her in them that were just painful to watch. I was looking at her going, oh my god, the kid is upstaging you so bad! Bring your A game!
I don't know what the deal was, but she could have and should have done a far better job on this part. But that being said, when a Oscar nominee actress doesn't bring her A-game is the biggest complaint that you can have about a movie. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially when she's in, regrettably, a minor role.
Much like in the future, I expect to see a lot more Jaden Smith. I expect that we'll see her a lot more in the future also. She is spectacular. Not in this movie, but she is spectacular in and of herself.
I think that brings us down to our final thoughts, Doug. How would you rate this movie?
I would rate this movie by saying it's equally good to the original Karate Kid. It didn't really bring anything new to the table. At the same time, it really wasn't poor either. I would say if you consider the first movie Three Pens in the Pocket Protector, then you will consider this movie Three Pens in the Pocket Protector.
For the most part, I agree with that. A majority of this movie really is the 1980s original Karate Kid movie. I loved the original movie. I was not surprised that I loved this one. In some ways, I thought some of the acting was better. In some ways, I didn't find it as good. But overall, I didn't mind the fact that I was rewatching a movie that was 25 years old. If you want to reimagine a film, this is the way to do it. I will agree with your assessment. This is a Three Pens in the Pocket Protector movie.
Well, Ken, how would you overall rate this movie?
I'd actually recommend my mom go see this movie, and there's not often I recommend my mom go see any movie anymore.
And if it's good enough for Ken's mom, it's good enough for your mom, too.
Great. Sue, Sandy, and Joan can go see the movies together.
I will say that I think just by the crowds in the two theaters, I think Karate Kid is probably going to do better in the box office, which means that it probably has a better shot at a sequel.
The fact that the Karate Kid matinee showing was packed on a Friday afternoon tells me that this movie's going to make a lot of money.
And I hope it doesn't have a sequel. It really doesn't need a sequel.
It doesn't need a sequel, but Hollywood will want a sequel.
Why be satisfied with one really good movie when you could make a second crappy imitation?
And make twice the amount of money. Both of these movies are swiftly going to my must-buy list.
I can understand your sentiment for that. If I own the original Karate Kid, I'd pick up this one also. On the other hand, A-Team is a horse of a completely different color, and it is going to be on my buy on the day it was released list.
As much as I thought that Karate Kid was as good as the original, in a lot of ways I felt A-Team was a bit better. And while the original series, as much as I loved it, wasn't on my must-buy list, this movie is going to be.
The only thing that I would have to say about A-Team is I was there for the original, and I enjoyed the movie even better. If I hadn't enjoyed the original, would I have enjoyed the movie as much? I don't know. I might have an inherent bias.
I think that that's a fair question. Would it be enough to convert someone? As far as a brand new viewer goes, my niece was with us to see this movie. She loved it. So I think that there's a brand new generation that's going to be enthralled with the A-Team. Now, to be honest, as we said at the beginning, the 80s are constantly being remade. What's old will continue to be new again. A new Predators movie is going to be released on July 9th. Red Dawn is being reworked and will hit theaters in November. And the classic movie Tron is getting a legacy in December. And it's not just the movie companies that are doing it. While Hawaii Five-0 was technically a 70s TV show, and Nikita was a 90s television show, they are both coming to TV this fall as well.
Aren't the Wayans brothers going to do a new Cosby show?
I don't know. I thought they were going to produce In Living Color, the movie.
As always, we appreciate you listening to us, and we encourage your feedback. Please write jim@tworponline.net. We can also be found on Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Twerpcast is a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2010.
Sweep the leg.